Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe, Bill Murray Pub, London. Please welcome man. He's very near the end of the fringe now, but he's feeling like he's, you know, it hasn't even begun. That's how he feels. It's Richard Herring!
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here. Thank you very much. Love to be at the Bill Murray. I was just saying... to my guest, what a fabulous venue this is. If you are in North London or, you know, can get a train here, do come and see stuff. They do amazing things. They were doing a seminar in the green room upstairs about how to ask for money at your bucket speech when I arrived, which, you know, is pretty good. And I'll take note of it because I've got a bucket for you as well after this. So anyway, welcome to Richard Herring's Lateral Spinothalamic Test podcast. I found a website with loads of acronyms of LST on it. That's one of them. It's, if you're wondering what that is, a test for the sensory pathway to the thalamus, of course. And that's what we're going to be mainly covering in today's podcast. A lot of people looking nervously at me like they've walked into the wrong room and they genuinely think that's going to happen. I haven't come up with a cool kids thing. I'm going to have to come up with one off the top of my head. I was playing Top Trumps the other day. Whew, that was close. I just saw some Top Trumps with some kids, and they call it rehearsed because they're cool. It was all the 1970s supercars. It's a good one. Look, welcome to the show. I should say that there are some gifts for you today for venturing out during a train strike, and do take those with my compliments. We do have a bucket at the back which you can put some money in for scope. It's free to get in, but it's not free to leave. That was one of the things you're not meant to say on a bucket speech. Also, it wasn't free to come in. So it was you had to pay to come in, and now you have to pay to leave. Or the doors are locked. It worked quite well. I think I would advise that. That was the things not to do. I don't remember what the things you're meant to do on the bucket speech, but never mind. And I will remind you, both you here and you at home, that the Rahulastapa... Thank you. Is going on. You've moved. You're much better than last week's audience. We're going on tour, so if you would like to see if we're coming to a town near you, and do come and see us if we are, richardherring.com/Rahulastupper. And there's some fantastic guests lined up for that, including Joe Lice in Birmingham. That's one of the first ones, so do book tickets. That's a big room. I hope more people turn up than have turned up here in Birmingham town. The tour's going to be in a lot of trouble. A lot of trouble. My guest this week is probably best known for her appearance in A Quickie in the Office. That's why we're here. I nearly went for Margaret Haag in Gigolitis, but that could be something amazing. I don't know, because that's clearly a Dutch thing. Will you please welcome the incredible stand-up comedian, Mickey Overman, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is. Hello.
Hello.
Lovely to see you.
Lovely to be here.
And I feel like, I've seen you a lot while I've been here at the Bill Murray, because your picture of your poster is right above the toilet in the performer's toilet upstairs.
It sure is. And it's right at eye height for when anyone is pissing with anyone who has a penis. That's nice. I get like a lot of boys coming up to me being like, I was just looking at you in the toilet. So that's nice. Also, I really want to say that this particular poster was like a jokey poster that I made for like a really stupid show that I was doing. And it was called, so it's like, it's called Riddled, and Riddled is like, it's like right over my crotch. I thought that would be funny, but now it just feels like a lot because it's been there for years.
It has been there for a while. The Sarah Kendall poster, I think, is more worrying because she's sort of down a bit lower, but she's got her mouth open. I feel if I was a younger man, I would attempt to wee into it, but I can't reach that far. I'm growing as a human being by not having texted her a picture of me attempting something horrible to that picture. So okay. That's good. Tell us about A Quickie in the Office. You were one of the contributors to A Quickie in the Office. Do you remember that? It's on your website.
It's only what I'm known for the most. Of course, I remember it, Richard. Of course I do. I have no idea
I think it was a sketch.
The Quickies.
Yeah.
As if you said something different. They were like the BBC. So when people were starting out, they could they could write something. Mm-hmm. I hadn't even written this one.
Okay,
but my boyfriend did.
Okay,
and that's how you get roles.
That's how you get on in this business.
Yeah. That's
what was Gigolitis? I'm quite interested in Gigolitis.
That was that's from when I lived in Canada.
Okay,
where I picked up this accent.
I thought that was going to be a Dutch, because you're called Margaret Hart.
Yeah, my friend was like, "I'll give you a Dutch name."
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All so, right. So that was written. I did like an acting course. I moved to Canada. I did like an acting course there. That's when I realized I didn't want to do acting and wanted to do something else. But whilst we were at the course, we were really encouraged to make like shitty, like little sketches and things. But this girl particularly took it really seriously. So everything that she made, she entered into festivals, which she should not have done. So one of them got into a festival, which is why I got like so much. It's everywhere is like a credit.
Yeah.
But it's just like a student.
Don't knock it. Don't knock it until you try it.
Mickey, it's great.
I've loved the stuff. I've seen, especially down to lockdown, you did lots of sketches and lockdown, and I've seen lots of clips of your stand-up online. I've not yet seen you live, but I'm a big fan of yours. But there's very little about you on the internet. Even your website is just a link to all your social medias. You don't have like even...
That's right. I recently changed that. Because I used to have like a big bio. But
yeah,
I'd
like to. That would have been useful for
me. That would have been useful. I don't know why. Recently I was just like, who cares? And then I changed it all to just go to my Instagram, which actually also doesn't tell you anything about me, I guess.
About you. So right. You're a mystery to me. So that's good, because I can ask you some questions and find out about you. But I don't, look how little I've got in my book about you. I hope you can talk a lot. That's all I can say.
I can make it all up as well. You don't know.
I don't know. I don't. Yeah, okay. You're welcome to make it up. Yeah, now, what I do know is you're from Amsterdam.
False. That's already wrong. Good start.
Yeah, what I do know, I'll re-edit it, is you're from the Netherlands.
Yeah! Well done.
Where are you? What, you're not from Amsterdam?
If you do edit it that way, that reaction will make no sense.
A lot of people in from the Netherlands. Not many in from Amsterdam, though. Whereabouts in the Netherlands are you from?
I'm from a place called Almere, which is... I always describe it to English people as like, it's like Milton Keynes. Yeah. So, appropriate response. Yeah, it's just one of those like cities that I think was... It's very new.
Right. You don't feel like that will happen in Holland. If Holland feels like it's going to be all...
The people of Holland are not on board with the city.
Right, okay.
It's often like we have a version of, you know, our version of The Guardian, basically, often will put out like a top 10 cities in the Netherlands. I don't know why, but it's always... and then they do like the worst ones as well, and it's always the number one for the worst cities in the Netherlands.
Well, that's something, isn't it?
Yeah. Real claim to fame. We have one celebrity, and he's a pedo. What a town. No, it's awful.
Yeah.
It has no... It's awful.
Has it got any windmills in it?
It's got no wind... No, it's new. It's new. I think it's like from the 60s, yeah. This city.
Well, but people have windmills, and the windmills make it a comeback. Holland could become the greatest country in the world.
What do you mean?
What do you mean
windmills are making a comeback?
That's how energy's going to be made in the future when all the fossil
fuels... Oh, okay. I thought you meant like old school windmills were making a comeback. Yeah. Yeah, so there's hope, I guess.
Yeah, there's hope that you
Thank
can
you. Thank you. Okay.
How did you... So you went to Canada before you came to the United Kingdom.
Yes.
And what did you become a stand-up in the United Kingdom or in Canada?
In the UK.
Yeah.
I moved here because... And I don't have much of a recollection of how this actually happened because my memory is pretty poor.
Good.
But I feel like... I feel like what happened is someone... When I was doing the acting course, I feel like someone told me that I should try stand-up instead. And then also they had lived in England and said that in England there was like such a... Just every pub would have like a comedy night. Mm-hmm. It seemed very low bar to try it here.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Because
it's everywhere.
It is everywhere.
And also no one knows me here. So like I thought it would be nice to be able to try something without like your cousin coming. I just feel like there's a lot of... stand-ups that start and then their family comes and sees them and it's heartbreaking because we all suck when we start and then like their family like never comes again because they're so bad because like you're bad when you first start like that's just true and so I got to avoid all of that like awkwardness and I just got to fail in anonymity which is really nice. I really recommend it, like it's really good.
I think it's interesting to do stand up in a different... Obviously, you speak English fluently.
Yeah.
So that's helpful. Because not many of us speak Dutch here. I think that might have been a problem. But I think it's always interesting when a comedian is from another place and especially if they're new to the country they're working in.
Yeah.
It's like the observations come from a fresh eye.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd been in Canada previously, so that was just before. So and then I moved back to the Netherlands for like 6 months before I moved to England. So it wasn't, and I'd been in Canada for 3 years. So it wasn't like it didn't seem like that crazy a thing to go somewhere English. And also, this is pre-Brexit that I moved here,
right?
Which it was like moving to another city in the Netherlands. Like it really was. Like all you needed to do was just go there, and then you could start. Like all I needed was my passport. Yes. And I could get all the good stuff, bank account.
Yeah,
it was actually quite hard to get a bank account, and when I moved it was quite hard. And then someone said go to Lloyds Bank, and I walked into Lloyds Bank, and I don't know what it was about me that seemed like I'd been struggling with this, but this is genuine. To the person behind the counter was like, all you need is a passport. That's what they said. It was true.
Great.
Yeah.
So you settled into the UK and then...
Yes.
Yeah, so what year was that? Before 2016?
Yes. Yes, 2015.
2015. Just generally. Right before. And then Brexit happened. Was that a concern? Did you think now I'm going to have to stop working in the UK?
Yeah. I thought like, well, there we go. But also, you know, that's when you start like dating English men.
And that's worked out for you?
Yeah, 5.5 years.
Yeah, good. Well done. Yeah. well, yes, all right. We'll move on. I was listening to you talk about like a lot of comedians have a trauma or something in their childhood that's quite difficult that drives them towards comedy. But I think like me, it sounds like your parents...
We're lovely.
Young, still in love, still together.
Yeah. Oh, your parents are still in love?
My parents met when they were 13.
Shit.
And they're 87 and 86 now.
Oh,
they've
my
been
God.
Together for 74 years.
Oh my God.
So yeah, so but I had the thing you were saying about that giving yeah. as an example to you as what you're aiming for in your own relationships is quite.
I think you don't realize, like you grow up and you think, well, first you think everyone's parents are like that. And then, you know, you go out into the world and you're like, oh, no one's parents are like this.
Yeah.
My parents are ridiculously happy. And then, you know, that's, then you don't realize that is, like, then you think, oh, that's nice, you know, and then you go out and you try and find love. And then, yeah, you realize the standard is set so impossibly high
yeah.
that it actually takes like quite a while to lower your own standards.
But you know, I think I did a bit of material about this in one of my shows. But actually, when you think about it, it's sort of better to, you know, just to go for the first person you meet and go, yeah, I'm going to spend the rest of my life with them.
Yeah,
it's more romantic to sleep with like 1,000 people and then go, You're the one.
You're speaking my language. You're speaking my language. I mean, not like 1,000. Just not, like logistically, I don't know how that would have happened.
It wasn't quite 1,000.
But yeah, I think that is much better.
Yeah.
Also, like, I didn't get a choice to pick the first one and yeah. stay. A lot of them left. and then this one hasn't.
Right.
So is that love?
It's a good start. That's how I judge my relationship.
Yeah, yeah,
my
yeah.
wife is still there in the morning. I think, thank God.
Yeah, that's how. That's love.
I don't know why. I don't know what she sees in me. But hopefully she'll stick around.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that a lot of you... Well, again, I think maybe that's a little bit of a difference between the UK and Holland, is that you talk quite openly about... I don't think you're not repressed, I think, is
no.
what I'd say. So you, but equally, you know, you're a regular person talking about about dating and sex.
Yeah.
And I think that's quite good to see. I think it's.
Oh yeah, I've been on a bit of a journey with it because yeah. I feel like when I first got here, there's just like you don't have any of the. I didn't have any like preconception of what like a British response to something would be. So I just kind of spoke with all the sort of like Dutch directness about sex and my experience with that. And then I had, you know, sometimes that didn't quite go so well, you know. And then I think in my performance for years, I kind of started apologizing for it.
Right.
So like, I still wanted to talk about it, but I was like couching it with a lot of like, it's okay because, you know, and I feel like I've only recently come out the other way where I've managed to stop apologizing for it again, because you shouldn't do that. And you shouldn't have to do that.
They should be apologizing to you.
Audience isn't apologizing.
They should be apologizing.
I'm like, this is a bad show. Yeah.
But I think I like it because it's sort of, you know, it gives a proper window into the, you know, into a modern dating scene and how things are. And the highs and lows of that. But also someone who's, you know, is... I mean, you know, your image on stage is, you know, is you kind of wear dungarees sometimes.
Yeah, you're kind of down.
Some female performers feel like, oh, I've got to really glam up and, you know.
I can't glam up.
I'm sure you can.
Well, no, I'm sure, like, if, yeah, with like a team.
Yeah.
But no, like, you know how your stage wear is like, it does kind of impact how you come across.
Yeah.
And I've done it before where I've worn something quite fancy and I just feel really uncomfortable.
Right.
On stage. And so the dungarees, yeah, I wore that last year. I tried to pick like an outfit. So last year I wore dungarees and this year I'm wearing this like little like skirt suit.
Yeah.
But it I can't go too fancy. I just feel weird. And then obviously the audience can feel that you feel weird because that's not what I would wear. So it just doesn't feel authentic.
Yeah.
But I think
it's exactly because you talk about, I think one of your routines, you say, I look like someone who was forced to learn the cello when they were a kid, which I think is like, that's sort of perfectly, but it perfectly encapsulates who you are. And then I think and then you're not expecting that person to then talk about losing their virginity in a fire.
I think you either have to really juxtapose it, like the outfit with the material, so then that becomes the joke, or it has to suit it.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah.
Yeah. But I think that's good because it is like, I think the British, and I think this is, that's why I think the audience have to apologise, because they have an idea that if someone, you know, that if someone isn't like projecting sex, that they wouldn't be having sex.
So
it's kind of great to see someone.
It's also quite strange because with my accent, because it's meaningless, this accent. It's like, it's nothing. And so like, because I sound like I'm from somewhere in the Netherlands. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I have an accent that you would project onto me, like an idea of what that person is. Because like it's from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it has, like, people have an idea of what that person is, which is, I don't know, like, I think probably like, and I'm not very posh, but I think it's probably a bit posh, my Dutch accent, in Dutch. And so people have like an idea of me in the Netherlands that they don't have here.
Right.
Which is quite freeing.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it means that I get to just be whoever I want to be to people. And people don't project anything onto me. But I do sometimes have to remember that they don't come into it with that preconception. Whereas in Dutch, I would, you know, that's easy for me. I would be able to address that because I've spent my whole life being that, perceived that way. Does that make sense?
It does. So do you largely play the UK or do you play in the Netherlands as well?
No, but just I've been a person in the Netherlands. Yeah. So I know.
So you've never done stand-up at home?
No, I've done some English nights in the Netherlands I found it quite tough.
Right.
I love being Dutch and I love the Netherlands, but the stand-up scene was still mostly boys, and so I felt a bit, I feel like here it's a bit more ahead. You would still get more comments there where it's like, they'll be like nice, but the nice comment is, I don't think girls are funny, but you are funny.
Yes.
So like, you know, so like you're like, okay, thank you.
I'm sure it still happens, but that was the, like, I think maybe 15 years ago in the UK, that's where female performers were in the UK.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really happen.
Far less. I can't even remember the last time someone would have said that to me here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
So look, tell us about because you've done Edinburgh a couple of times. How many times have you done Edinburgh? A few times.
Yes. This will be the fifth.
Fifth time. Yeah. Great. So what?
Because we're in Edinburgh right now.
Yeah. What's the show this year and what's it about?
It's about whether or not to have a baby.
Oh.
You're a dad?
I am a dad. I mean, I didn't have to have the baby, which is a big thing.
Yes.
And if I'd had to have the baby, I might have thought twice about it. Especially having seen someone having a baby, it's not very nice.
From what angle?
From every angle I've seen it, and it's quite traumatic. I mean, no one really talks about the dads, but it's quite traumatic for the dad.
Yeah, no one does talk about the dads.
And my wife got a bed and everything. I had to sit in a chair the whole time.
This is good stuff.
Yeah, so you know, I would do it.
This could be your next show.
I would do that. You could be the dad.
Yeah.
And your partner could have the baby.
Yeah.
That's what I would suggest to you.
To me. Even though he's a boy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do anything these days.
Yeah.
It's a good subject, and being a parent is an incredible thing. Not always good, but I like it. It's been good for me. But equally, it's one of those things that you can't go to people. You must become a parent.
No, because it's
great for everyone, because it isn't great for everyone. And I think if you want to do it, then...
Got to this point where, because I'm in my 30s now, so like I got to this point where I got broody, which is what happens to people in their 30s. And I've struggled with the idea of it because I basically asked my mum... And said, why did you decide to have a baby? And I think she was confused by the words why and decide. Because she was just kind of like, that's what you did. And I just don't feel like that's what it's like anymore.
No. Well, it is a choice, I think, now. Much more than
it's a choice,
would have been.
But also, like, the world is ending.
Yeah, that is also true.
So that's like...
And that is depressing. My kids will be about 25, 28 when the world ends.
They
get a little bit of being an adult. But if you have one now, it's kind of just as life's about to start.
Yeah,
it's like, sorry, everyone.
You get 10 years. Have fun. I do think that's... it's a really hard decision to make now. I envy anyone who doesn't worry about it.
Yeah, it is. Well, a lot of people don't. I mean, it is amazing to the extent. I mean, what's just happened this week when we're doing that? you know, the election, Boris Johnson's constituency supposedly lost because of the ULEZ thing.
Yeah.
And people kind of put next to, on the newspaper, put next to roads on fire. and people are still worrying about, oh, well, you know, we don't want, we can't stop the emission. Yeah, yeah. So no one's really, there are people still in complete, those people who believe that it's not happening, despite the evidence, still believe it's not happening.
Yeah, so they can just have a baby.
Yeah, so yeah, they can just have a baby. But
good
then,
for them.
But yeah,
appearance is bliss. Is the lesson?
It is a worry. I think you hope, don't you?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the journey I go on in the show a little bit. Is that like it just descends a little bit into hopelessness, and then you know I dig my way back out because that's no way to live. Is basically the trajectory. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know the human race has been through a lot of stuff.
Yeah, but I also whenever like Elon Musk or someone like him is like, what a, you know, we can't, we must have babies otherwise we go extinct. I just don't find that a very compelling argument. I just don't. I'm just like, and then what? Like, they don't exist yet, those people that you're worrying about. So like, they're not upset.
Yeah.
Like, so I just don't know why that would be so bad. I don't know why it would be so bad.
It wouldn't necessarily be so bad. Certainly from the perspective of people who haven't been born, you're correct.
Thank you.
It's fine for them.
Yeah, the rest of us
who have to sit through the being burnt by the sun.
And like not having, I guess so. And like not having like any new life to like look at with hope.
Yeah.
But even that, like, how long will that take? Like 100 years?
What, if we just all stop having babies?
Yeah.
We stop now, yeah. We,
stop, you know, now.
There might be a very old person on their own in 120 years' time who probably won't be able to look after themselves very well.
But we'll
have a lot of stuff. I think, you know, I think they'll still be, if they can find a place to live, if they're just the last person. You know, there are too many people. There are too many people.
Yeah.
But, you know, the history is full of terrible things happening. You know, the dinosaurs, look at those guys. Don't hear much from them anymore. Yeah.
They're on your book?
There's one there. So, you know, it's all, things ebb and flow, and we're so, you know, I think we're so lucky to live at the time we do in the place that we do.
Well, I do, of course. I'm a woman.
Yeah.
No point in the past is better than the forefront point.
That is true. Yeah. But I think it's true for everyone. It sort of feels almost, you know, for me, it's about the best evidence for the fact we're living in a simulation. Is that we are here and we live in a nice place.
Yeah.
In a place that probably won't, will probably not be that badly hit by global warming either. So, you know, the problem will be everyone else trying to get here.
Yes, right.
Yeah. So, you know, no immigrants is what I'm saying. I hope everyone's behind me. I'm getting in early. We just need some machine guns set up.
And you're also saying that to an immigrant.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I am,
so it
to
feels
an audience
pointed.
Of immigrants. Yeah, you know. I think we can let the Dutch, I mean, if the EU had just been the Dutch,
I mean,
we'd still be friends. It's,
you know,
the,
what?
It's the other ones we didn't want. That was the problem.
I genuinely have had people say that to me. And it is so upsetting. Like,
you've had the politeness to learn English. That's the thing. So, like, like those French, they can speak English and
here
they still choose not
to. Yes, let's get into it. I get a lot of comments online saying people like that they're like not even buying that I'm a Dutch person.
Right.
And I think it's very interesting because like, what a boring thing to make up.
I might pretend to be Dutch for a while.
Yeah, do it.
I'm gonna try it.
You could do it.
I love
the blue eyes.
Thank you. My first girl I ever properly kissed was a Dutch girl on a campsite. She was called, she's called Carla. Do you know her?
Yeah.
She'll be about 55 now.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Could, yeah.
I think it's the funniest response to that.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
So I'm very fond of the Dutch race for that reason.
Aww.
Because she let me kiss her.
Yes.
And it was nice.
And they all do.
they pretty much do. There was a nice Dutch girl when I went on to archaeological dig as well. She ended up in my play about it as well. So, you know, I've got a teenage remembrance of the Dutch.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I love Holland. I've done a few gigs out there. Do you think, what are the differences between the two nations that you can see from your perspective of looking at it?
In a comedy sense?
Yeah, but a comedy and in reality.
Well, in a comedy sense, I always feel bad when people go to the Netherlands because they're always like other acts, they'll just be like, we're not laughing. But I feel like that's like because comedy club behavior is very strange. Like, that is a learned behavior.
Right.
The way people are in comedy clubs. Yeah. It's not like that is... like, when my sisters come and they're always like, you laugh at the jokes, but you've already seen them before, like, of my friends or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, that's what you do. And, like, it's a... and then, you know, it's like... I can only think of the Dutch word now. It's contagious, right? Oh, so it's like when
what's
you're
the what's the Dutch word for contagious?
Now that I've said the English word, I don't remember. Oh God!
Wow!
Yeah, I really struggle.
It's
with
like contagious. This thing that you once you've tried to think of the word contagious, you can't remember it in the other language. You can't flip back.
I really struggle. My boyfriend is learning Dutch now, and I'm so glad because like when I'm there and I have to like go back and forth between the two,
yeah,
I really like my brain really really struggles with it. I'm in awe of people who are translators because I actually think that's very very hard to do.
Right.
To go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. It's probably like a muscle, and you can just train it.
Yeah.
I find it really difficult.
Okay. Well, I would as well if I was able to speak two languages. Speak a bit of French. Bonjour.
Which one would you pick?
Well, if I could speak, I'd love to speak Italian. I've tried to learn Italian. I was never good at... I used to like Latin. I got quite good at Latin, but then I didn't do it anymore. And I tried to learn Italian as a...
There's Italians here because they got very excited.
Yeah. Un biglietto e una guida, per favore. Yeah, good. He's got a ticket. He's got a ticket and a guide, but well, he almost has. But yeah, I really struggle. I always struggle a bit with languages, but yeah, I would love to be able to speak Italian. It's a bit easier. Italian's quite an easy language. So if I can't learn Italian...
Oh my God. Shots fired.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. He sounds like he speaks good English. Sounds it's better than me. Do you think in English or do you think in Dutch?
Yeah, my uncle, when I was young, my uncle was a pilot for British Airways.
Oh, right.
And so he lived here. he lived in Oxford. I remember being a kid and asking him about that. I was like, what do you think in English? The idea of it just seemed completely ludicrous to me, that you would think in another language. And obviously I didn't speak, you know, yeah. I was like 10. I didn't speak any other languages at that point. So I was baffled. But then you do it yourself and it's like, oh, it's like, yeah, at some point your subconscious just takes over.
Okay.
Yeah. So now it's English, but then usually it's like when I go over, I go back to Dutch.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's good.
So it's kind of like
it's that. Like a double life you lead, right? So you're a comedian in the UK.
That's right.
I'm like a spy. And you go back home. It's kind of nice to have two identities.
Yeah, it's like what I got to do is like, you know, when you're in school and then you pick a nickname for yourself and you're like, this is who I am now. Like when you go to a new school, that's basically what I got to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which in school never works, but when no one knows anything about you.
Okay.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, like, tell us, well, we've moved away a little bit from the Edinburgh Show, but tell us what it's called. And so it's called the Precipice.
The Precipice.
So that you're on the precipice.
I'm on the precipice.
Yes. Not being a mother and being a mother.
Yeah, yeah, like choosing to have a child. Yeah.
And where are you on?
Where am I on?
Yeah, where are you on?
I'm on. It's go time. Let's do
go
it.
Go time, okay.
Not you and I, but let's okay. do it. Yeah, basically, we've decided now, my boyfriend and
no,
I.
No, no, wait, what venue are you on? But
oh, I thought you were like, what point
let's
are
go.
You
at
with the having a baby or not? Where,
are you fertile at the moment? Because I'm happy to give it a go. if it's any help, I've got two, so I know I can do it.
Oh no, I'm blushing. I'm really blushing now. Oh boy.
Let's talk about the venue and then we'll talk. Then we'll discuss.
But I
parenting.
Thought that was like a good question.
Good. It is a good question.
You've made me feel silly.
I'm sorry. Not on purpose. It's a.
No, let's talk about the venue actually. Okay. That's ripe.
Yeah. and I mean the venue where you're doing your show, not where you're planning to.
Oh, I got a question again. Yeah, Jesus.
It's important to get that
so
right
many,
as
so
well.
So many curveballs in this interrogation. Okay, the venue of my show. Yeah, I'm at the Hive, Monkey Barrel the Hive.
Lovely. Yeah, another Monkey Barrel.
Another Monkey
very
Barrel.
Very popular with the younger comedians.
It's the cool kids, man.
Yeah, it is the cool kids.
Yeah.
That's a good one for future use for me. That's good. And what time are you
6:10.
On? 6:10. Good. That's a good time as well.
It's a great time.
That's going to be good. Everyone's finished work. They can have a drink and they can come and see your show.
That's right.
At the Hive.
Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes. And now, where am I going to?
Where are you gonna, so you're going to have? Are you going to have a baby? Is that?
That's what we. That's basically that the show. Kind of takes you through my thought process through like from the moment where I was like, you can't, to the moment where I was like, let's just do it.
Let's see.
Yeah.
And the fact that you're heavily pregnant now gives away your decision.
You know, that's obviously like people are like, why are you even doing this conceit? This is you're obviously pregnant.
I think, you know, I really understand that. And I think even like, you know, 5 and 8 years ago when we had our kids, I wasn't thinking of the environmental thing. I was thinking, am I prepared to destroy my life to bring other people into the world? That was my main concern.
That is so fair. Yeah, I feel like that's a good concern, but that's even like beneath the climate change things for me. I I feel like I'm ready for that.
Yeah.
I feel very ready to... for life to not be about me.
Well, good, because it really isn't going to be about you.
Yeah, I'm sure if it happens, if I'm lucky enough and it happens, I'll be like, oh my goodness, so naive. But yeah, I feel quite ready. Like again, like I have really good parents and they are, you know, like they, I would love
I think
to do
what is, you know, I think what's great about it is because, you know, I think being a comedian can be an introspective job and it can be a selfish job. And I think for me, it's given me, you know, like there's a reason to be working as well. So when you're working, there's a reason to be working.
Yeah.
And then also there's a reason not to be working, which I think is nice. So I think it is. It's a, you know, it's a decision I should have made in my 30s as well, to be fair. And if I had, I'd have a grown-up children now. And then I'd be out of this hell.
You'd be out of that.
I'd have had the living hell that I'm in. I'd definitely be divorced from whoever I'd had kids with then. It would be great. I'd be having the time of my life.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, I'm happy. I'm happily married with my happy family and I have to stay with them. And I resent the whole thing.
Do you think in a parallel universe?
Yeah, I mean, presumably, yeah.
That's true. I mean, you're wearing a Rick and Morty t-shirt.
I am. I don't think there are parallel universes, but yeah.
But it's fun to think about.
It is fun to think about it, but I think I would. I'm not sure I'd still be alive if I had all of them. Well, I might have died. I think if there's an infinite amount, I might have survived in a couple. But
this
I think
is the
like
only one you're alive in
this timeline. I think if I had Karen living, I lived a, you know that kind of life till I was 40, where I was out drinking and you know,
whoring
and being a whore.
Yeah,
you know, I think if I'd carried that on, I'm not sure what would have happened to me.
Whoring is a great word.
Thank you.
I love it.
Good.
I really love it.
Well, it's good to be a whore.
What I
would say. Got to embrace the positive side of it. And for men to admit their whores as well as the beautiful women who are whores as well. Thank God for those whores. But I'm glad to be what I'm.
I don't think you're appropriating it. I think let's make a genderless 100%.
Absolutely.
Wonderful.
Good.
Okay.
Let's ask you some emergency questions.
Let's do it.
Hey, look, I'm going to go to the book that the audience have been lucky enough to be gifted. What a wonderful man I am. It cost £10 to buy this. If you had to have sex with an animal, which animal would you choose to have sex with? If you had to.
Let's savor it.
I mean, I want you to think about it very carefully.
Let's really think about this one. I feel like I would want it to be one. Oh God, I'd have to take it. Okay, I feel like I would want it to be one who I can communicate to.
Yeah. So like that one of those chimpanzees that can.
Sorry.
Talk.
Yeah. Actually, that's interesting because like you said. Because you said chimpanzee, and then I was like, oh, that would be the one that you could communicate it to the most. But for some reason, I was thinking dolphin.
Okay,
so I'm going to
that's
go
all right.
Dolphin. I feel like they'd like it.
I think a dolphin is the sensible choice, actually, out of all, because it's the most intelligent one. You can use its blowhole.
Plus.
It's got
so
a double.
So sexy.
It's very sexy.
Such a sexy animal. Yeah.
There are people who do have sex with dolphins. I mean, there are people who have sex with everything. I don't know what
I'm
saying.
Yeah.
These people are generally men. Although I think there might be. You've got to be careful.
No, go down this hole.
You've got to be careful. I did look into dolphin sex for some reason in one of my. And I think it was in Talking Cock. There was a whole website about how to have sex with a dolphin. You've got to be careful if you do have sex with the blowhole because it could, if it blows, it would remove your
again.
Genitals.
This would not be a problem for me. I would have to take it.
Yeah, you would have to. You can finger the blowhole.
Ooh.
Yeah. I've thought a lot about it.
Good.
There was someone who claimed the dolphins could consent. My problem with having sex with an animal is, you know, I would feel the consent was not necessarily there.
That's the only issue.
So, but then they don't really consent for me to put them in a burger either, and I'm happy to do that. So,
yeah.
So, you know, maybe
that's
it's not so
different.
Bad. It's different.
That's different.
That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Have you ever seen a ghost? Do you have ghosts in Holland?
No. I've never seen a ghost. I feel like ghosts are people misunderstanding peripheral vision. I feel like they think it's something different.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Maybe the Dutch are too practical for ghosts.
Yeah.
But I don't think I've ever met a Dutch person who has seen a ghost.
I mean, and there's loads.
It's usually like Americans, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's, you know, it's, I would say it's usually mentally ill people.
And the mentally ill.
Yeah, okay. But, you know, God
but
bless
I love
them.
A ghost story, I should say. Like,
me too.
If someone's like, someone told me a ghost story the other day, I was so enthralled. I was just like, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Even though I think if I'd been there, I'd have been like, yeah, it's the wind.
Right. We'll do one more. I'm not going to ask you that. I'll tell you what this question was. I'm not going to ask it. I don't know how this even made it to 123. I was 123 questions in before I asked, if you had to bathe in excrement, what animal or individual's human excrement would you choose to bathe in? I'm not going to ask you that.
Why not?
Because that's a horrible question.
But we've done sex with animals.
That's true.
I don't know how this is worse.
Would you choose a human's excrement? I mean, I've bathed in excrement. That's another thing you'll find out about when you've had kids, you end up pretty much bathed in excrement.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think for some reason I'm thinking horse.
Yeah.
Feels regal.
You know, a horse is a good choice because horse poo is just straw, really, as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
exactly.
It'd be a bit prickly, but it wouldn't be very stinky, I don't think.
It would function as both a bath and a scrub.
And my dog eats horse poo as well, so, you know, finish the bath and then get the dog to come and lap it up.
Such an interesting life.
Yeah, thank you. I live in the countryside, so I find these things out. All right, I want to ask you about your internet stuff that you do because you're now putting up like a lot of your sets from stand-up gigs, which is a lot of the comedians have started doing this on Instagram and TikTok especially.
It's much more effective.
Yeah, but I really like the sketches you did. So did you start doing the sketches in, was that a lockdown thing?
It was a lockdown thing, and I was, and I loved it.
Yeah.
Like, I really, really loved it. But I think they were a bit odd. Like, I don't think I don't think they really related. Like, I don't think people related to them very much. Like, sometimes there would be like one that did really well, and I would be as surprised as anyone else. Just be like, oh, okay. But most of them. But I always. Me and my boyfriend, we both did it, and we had this rule where, like, we would laugh about, like, if we bombed on all platforms, because we would put them up on, like, Twitter and TikTok and Instagram, and we would just, like, message each other, like, B-O-A-P, like, bombed on all platforms.
Right.
And then we would just laugh, and then we had this, like, rule where you had to ask the other person, but did you think it was funny? And then we would go, yeah.
Yeah.
And then that was fine.
Yeah.
And then you wouldn't feel sad about it. But it did get to a point where I was like, I'm feeling sad about it.
Okay.
Like, it's like, I think all of these are funny. And people are like, no. So, you know, it got to... I did this one series, which I did really early on in lockdown, which was like, I did like a travelogue, which was just like me going to different countries. And it was all green screen, obviously, because it was the pandemic.
Yeah.
And I thought it was the funniest fucking thing I'd ever done in my life. And I think 3 people saw it. And
but that doesn't mean it's not funny. It just means three people who saw it didn't kindly then go, hey, everyone, look at this.
Some people were kind. Yeah. But I also really, what the main thing was really with it was that it's like, it takes a lot of time. And whilst I love doing it, it actually doesn't make people go and see your stand-up because they don't think you're a stand-up.
Right, okay.
So for social media, as sort of like a promotional tool, it became a bit like irrelevant.
Yeah.
Because no one would, because they think you're like a sketch person. So yes. They don't, unless you go like mega big. They don't really go and look for you to do stand-up. So I was like, okay, I'm going to be a bit more sensible and just put up stand-up videos.
Yeah.
And that is really, it's been very good.
Good. Well, that's good.
Yeah, it's been very effective. People have found me and come to shows and I'm like, okay, I get it.
I mean, it's a really interesting, you know, it's really fascinating to me how, you know, even the last 2 or 3 years, I guess because of lockdown partly, that whole thing has changed. That people put up their whole, their specials, put them up for free now rather than trying to get paid for the downloads.
And it
makes sense, and it means, you know, people come and see you live. So it is great that comedians are using it in order to get people to come out and see live stuff, which I think there's a danger with TikTok and stuff that it's people just on their phone, Instagram and stuff goes by. But yeah,
if
it's getting people out.
No, they actually come. It actually translates into bums on seats.
Cool. So, are you going to be touring this show?
That's the hope, basically. And I also want to go more out and do more European dates as well, because there's lots of people in Europe that are online.
Yes.
And they ask you to come, and so I want to go and see them. But also I love gigging in Europe because I feel like my material goes really down really well there, whereas sometimes I feel like here I struggle a little bit as a European girl.
Yeah. Well, because
there's a little bit of an anti-Europe sentiment.
Do you think it's because of that? The audience.
It definitely changed. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Not in London, obviously. Like, not any of you, but like.
There's a couple of racists.
All right. Cool. You know your audience.
Yeah, I know.
It was a bit sad. It was like, there's definitely some.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's definitely some audiences where that I come away a bit sad.
Oh.
Yeah, because and you know, you think that like everyone just comes for jokes, but they just they look at you and sometimes say to you, I don't understand.
Well, you know, I mean, it's sort of to me that I love like an outsider perspective on stuff.
Yes, so, that's what I think.
So, you know, I think that's why I love it when a comedian comes from anywhere and, you know, gives you their view of you.
Yeah.
I think, but then I guess that kind of person who feels uncomfortable about people coming in from anywhere doesn't want to be told that they're...
want to be told what they already know.
Yeah. Well, they want... But like, because when, you know, if you're in a different culture, you go to another culture and you go, wow, this is weird. And it either makes you think, oh, so... the stuff we do is weird to them. So, you know, maybe all cultures are weird and maybe there isn't a right way of doing things.
There's so much scope for great, great jokes coming from a different place and being an outsider.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, I mean, like, not to sound too down, I love living here. Like, I really do. And I mean, most of it goes really well, but I've just had to shift a little bit and be a bit more specific about where I go.
Yeah.
Because I was coming away sometimes just a little bit too sad. And obviously I'm not saying that like anytime I was doing badly, it was the audience's fault. Like, that's the worst thing you could say as a stand-up comedian. That's not what I mean at all. But I just mean like when like specific sentiments were very clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes me know. Part of the reason I wanted to do this because, you know, Edinburgh is an international festival and it's great to have people from different... And I sort of worry that, you know, of the many worries I have about the Edinburgh Fringe, which, you know, are a bit going in the wrong direction. But, you know, things like Brexit obviously affect how many international acts are going to come over or feel welcome.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's...
I mean, the Edinburgh Fringe is still very, I feel very, you know, that's not... I feel like that's not one of the problems.
No, it's not one of
There's
the problems.
There's so many problems.
But it's difficult to, you know, it's more difficult to get people
across. Yes, yeah, with like visas.
You're living here and that's fine. But if, but if, you know, if people are trying to come over, it's definitely altered the landscape a little bit. But the landscape is altering so... anyway, that, you know, that's, which is, you know, part of the reason that I'm doing the Edinburgh Fringe without going to the Edinburgh Fringe.
Yeah, I get it.
Is that it just, if it sort of has this weird feel to it. But
you know what's nice about online is it takes all those borders away again.
Yeah.
Like it really does.
Yeah.
And like you can feel that because when you get comments from everywhere and people just being like, oh my God, come to India, you're just like, wow, this is so cool.
Yeah.
And this would have never happened, obviously, if I just didn't have this platform. And it also takes away a lot of gatekeepers.
Yes.
Because, like, you can find... There's people who have sold out tours, who really good people who've sold out tours over, like, all over the world.
Yeah.
Who don't even have, like local representation.
Yeah.
And I think that is really, really amazing. Like,
yeah, it is, you know, it's a real positive thing, you know, and obviously it's something I've embraced myself for many years, but it's...
It's
great to see it reaching that, and that's what I, you know, that's what appealed to me in the first place was just, you know, I don't have to go through some cunt to get this on.
Yes.
I can just do it. And if it's good, it's good. You know, that's what I like. You know, I like that attitude you're going on. We gave this a go and, you know, and then we tried something else.
Yeah.
And then that's it. You know, the audience will tell you. You'll find that from the audience. And they might not, you know, you might occasionally bin something that's good too soon, or you might think, you know, how long do I have to persist with this before this takes off?
Yeah.
But like there's lots of luck in it, but it is nice to go, oh, well, I think this might work, so I'm going to give it a go. I think playing myself at snooker for 15 years in an attic might work as a podcast. I mean, it hasn't, but I thought it might, and I'm going to carry on until everyone admits that it works, because I am correct.
Yes.
But I also, that's what I like, the smallness of it as well. I like the fact you can do a small idea.
Yeah.
So to me, it wouldn't, you know, I really like those videos that you were putting out. That's what probably made me spot you, really, was those videos. So it is, you know, it's often, if you get one person or 10 people, but if they really like it, then it's 10 people who'll come for life. And
it really is. And also, like, you know, it is still on. Like, it's all on there. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not like you take it off.
No.
So now there's people who have found a stand-up video who then, like, I see them, like, scroll. You know when you get that on, like, social media, you see one person and they've liked everything?
Yeah.
And it's really nice because, like, they've gone back and, like, seen everything you've done, including the sketches, including my incredibly silly travelogues. And, like, you know, it's just, it's not gone. It's just like a little archive. I mean, I think it's brilliant.
Brilliant. And so, I mean, is there anything coming post Edinburgh, or is it just going to be personal life for a little while? What do you think?
Well, that's why it's a bit of like a weird, you know, because it's like, you know, with my boyfriend and I want to start trying. So I didn't want to, you know, I'm not saying that it will happen straight away or happen at all, but we didn't want to plan like too crazy a big thing when life might change. But yeah, I mean, like, I think touring it is definitely.
Yeah. And, you know, but I think also now there's so many, and it sounds like you're in a great partnership anyway, where you know, you're both taking responsibility, which, you know, I hope is the modern way. But, you know,
he says he wants to go Dutch on the baby.
But it's, you know, you can still completely talk, you know, there's, I mean, Catherine Ryan is the ultimate example of
Yes, probably.
To the extent that it's not a good example because she's too uber. Like, Catherine Ryan wanted to go on the one show 2 hours after giving birth on the last one, which is, I think, insane.
But I don't understand.
No.
No.
But she's shown it, you know, especially with her first child, actually, more than anything.
Yes.
When she wasn't famous, and when she was a single parent as well.
Well,
she toured with her daughter and, you know,
yeah,
and it
I
was
think
great.
if you're one of those people, and I think I am, who just loves comedy for comedy, you will just figure it out.
Yeah.
Like, and I love it.
Yeah.
So I will just figure it out.
Good. Yeah. It is, you know, and it's both my, as in your relationship, I believe both me and my wife are comedians, and both you and your partner are comedians. And so, you know, you do, it's fortunate really that you can work it out, and you can, you can, you know, take in turns to try stuff.
Yeah.
So it works out.
I heard stories of like Bobby and Harriet.
Yes.
And then Harriet would be in the car with the baby, and then he would get off stage, and then he would take the baby, and she would go on. I'm like, people are. I mean, people are doing it, so you know, if they can do it.
It is, and you know, as a comedian, I think the nice thing about being a comedian parent is you are still home a lot more than most parents.
Yeah.
So you're spending a lot. If you're working, you're spending a lot of time with your family, and it's a great thing.
And
then you decide, you know, I'd sort of, it did make me think I want to work a bit less, but now I think I want to work a bit more again. So it's, it all works out. So remind us of where you're on and the title of the show. And
So it's The Hive at Monkey Barrel at 6 to 10.
Cool. And is there anyone you're looking forward to seeing? Do you go and see stuff? Is there anyone you'd like to recommend?
I love going to see stuff. I would recommend Crizzets. I don't know if anyone's seen Crizzets before. You have? Yeah, they're a double act, a sketch act.
Okay.
And they have a show. The last year they did a cowboy musical, and this year it will be a war musical.
Okay.
And that's so funny. And I love Heidi Regan.
Yes.
And I love Sarah Keyworth.
Yes, of course. Well, we didn't talk. Well, let's quickly talk about your podcast.
Oh, right.
Because you have a podcast with Sarah, which we talked to Sarah about. So tell us a little bit about that.
I just love them. And like, we've been friends. We got close in the pandemic, but because of the sad reason of our friend passed away. But then we sort of got really close through that. And then we started a podcast, if you're not like you and you just, you know, if you like do it with another person, then it's like an excuse to see your friend.
Yep.
And I think that's really good. Like, it's just like a really good way to see your friend. And I love Sarah so much. And we have a lot of fun.
Yeah. So what's it called, the podcast?
Thank Fuck for That.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was going to say that, and then I thought it might sound like I'm just saying thank fuck for that.
But
do listen. Listen to a lot of those when I interviewed Sarah as well. So it's terrific fun. Ladies and gentlemen, please give it up for the amazing Mickey Overman. Do go and see her show. Thank you so much for coming along. You have been listening to Rahulastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Mickey Overman. Thank you to Scant Regard for providing this music. I'm indebted to George, the incompetent Sandman. He's very competent, really. I'm indebted also to Chris Evans, not that one, and Ben Evans, not that one, or that one, or that one. This is the Sky Potato Fuzz, and everyone at the Bill Murray, of course, thank you for having us. This is the Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStripe.com production.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. RichardHerring.com/ballback/tour or RichardHerring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour.
I love you all. I'm out.